Okay. Well, let me go ahead and welcome you all, since not everyone made it online yet, so that they can hear the beginning of this. This is Karen Finn, and I'm really excited to have y'all here tonight for the first session of the Spring 2006 WIRE Workshop. And of course, WIRE stands for When Your Relationship Ends. And I know that deciding to join a workshop like this can be, I don't know, kind of scary, really. You're going through a life change that isn't necessarily one of the easiest ones, and I really want to thank you all for your courage in deciding to do something that's a little bit out of the norm to make sure that you're helping yourself as much as possible as you navigate the end of your relationship. So let's go ahead and get started with tonight's agenda. I've kind of already welcomed y'all to tonight's class, but I thought we'd start with some brief introductions with your name, your relationship status, and where you're coming from. Then we'll go into a little bit of a presentation so y'all can kind of have some information to think about, and we'll discuss it. We'll review the homework assignment for this week, and then we'll close. Any questions about the agenda before we get started with it?
No.
No? Okay. Well, let me go ahead and start off with the introduction so that y'all can kind of get a feel for it. Hello, I just heard somebody else join. We're just getting started, and we're just reviewing tonight's agenda, and we're going to start in with the introductions, and I'm going to go first so that everyone can kind of have a model here to work from, and nobody has to volunteer to go first. So my name's Karen Finn. I have been remarried for about 5.5 years now. I was divorced in 2002 after almost 18 years of marriage, and I'm calling from the U.S. and a little town called Ovilla, Texas, which is about 30 miles south of Dallas. Who would like to go next?
Hugo here. I don't have a problem. I'll go next.
Thank you, Hugo.
Hello? Okay. My name is Hugo Harmon. I'm from South Africa, and I'm in the process of divorce, so obviously I have a lot to learn. I don't know what else to say, but it's uncharted territory for me, and uncertain times. So I'm looking forward to get guidance from this session. Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Hugo, and of course, very, very happy to have you online with us tonight.
Okay, thanks.
I'll go next.
Who would like to? Thank you, Verlan.
Yeah, I'm Verlan, and I'm calling from Indianapolis, Indiana. And I'm not officially yet divorced, but I'm separated. My partner and I were together for 27 years, and I'm a gay person, and she moved out. It'll be 2 years this April. But the divorce is not finalized yet. I'm not applying because I didn't want it. And so she'll have to take that initiative. So anyway, let's see.
Thank you, Verlan. I appreciate you sharing.
Thank you.
Again, my name is Tom Carbon. I'm from Fairfield, Connecticut. I've been married for 22 years. My wife filed for divorce in June of last year.
Connecticut, I think, is one of those states where it has a fairly lengthy process for divorce, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's very expensive.
Yeah, unfortunately, those two often go together, don't they?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, without further ado, let's go ahead and dive into the presentation next. And, Hugo, I don't know if you were able to connect to see my screen, but I sent you the slides. So
yes,
you can follow on that way.
I have both, yeah.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. Okay. So let's go page down. Oh, change my focus here. Relationship surgery. That's what I hear a lot of people describe divorce is feeling like. You know, you and your former partner wind up cutting apart and severing everything that kept you together as a couple and dividing things up. It's, you know, slicing and dicing, and not in the most friendly sense usually. And it's really a pretty painful and graphic way to describe it, I think. For me, when I went through my divorce, I thought of it more like I had been tied up, blindfolded, and stuffed into a runaway roller coaster. And, you know, I just didn't know what to expect next. I didn't know if I'd be thrown to the right or to the left, you know, in a loop-de-loop or in a corkscrew. It really, in a lot of ways, was terrifying to me. And my equilibrium, you know, kind of my sure-footedness in just how to live my life, it was completely shot. And I really didn't understand what to expect next. And that's why, you know, I said I felt like I was blindfolded. It was like I was along for this horrible, hideous ride, and I wasn't sure how to get out of it. So one of the things that I did when I got divorced was I took a course very much like this one. In fact, I based this course in large part on that, and I talked to the instructor, you know, to make sure that he was okay with doing it. And then I, you know, over the years, I've added my twist to it. And so my belief is that through the next 10 weeks of this workshop, that together we'll talk about things, and hopefully you'll get the knowledge and the camaraderie to be able to at least remove your blindfold so you can kind of have some understanding of what to expect and what may be coming up next. And if you're really lucky, you know, maybe you'll be able to loosen your bonds and maybe even get off the roller coaster altogether and just start regaining reestablishing, I guess is a better word, your equilibrium in your life. And, you know, that's obviously my hope for you, is that that's exactly what the 10 weeks does, is allows you to really reestablish your equilibrium. Now, divorce is filled with a very large adjustment period. And I don't know about you, but I always thought it was rather funny when you see on the blackboard, you know, the beginning of an equation, then the professor would draw this great big squiggly and say something like, then a miracle happens, and then you get to the solution, right? And that's kind of what the divorce process feels like. I mean, you know when it starts, right? Because somebody says, I want to get a divorce. Or their behavior indicates that they want to get a divorce. And you know at some point it will end, but you don't really see how to get from the beginning to the end, and it can feel like it's going to take a miracle to get there. And to kind of help put a little bit of understanding in this miracle that it is going to be a process that does actually come to an end, I thought it'd be nice to share with you something that I shared in one of the videos, if you saw the videos from, I think it was last week or the week before, and that's this idea of the tornado on its side. If you look at this squiggly line and you say that on the left is the beginning and on the right is the end, and the squiggly line describes your emotional state, you can see that you start off, you know, not at the high, but, you know, pretty high while you're married, and then all of a sudden, you know, you find out you're going to get divorced, and that's when the swings start happening. You'll feel like you're hitting the pits and then gain some traction, and then hit the pits and gain some traction. And it can be really, really frustrating and confusing. I know for me, when I was going through this process, honestly, I felt at times like I might be losing my mind or going crazy because I didn't recognize me. I didn't recognize the emotions that I was feeling, and the rapidity of change was really startling. And it wasn't until I took this class that I started to understand, oh, this is kind of normal. It's horrible, but it's kind of normal. And so if any of y'all have been experiencing, you know, the fluctuations in emotions, I want you to really know that it's normal. It doesn't feel normal by any stretch of the imagination, but it is normal. It's pretty typical that people go through this. So, with that kind of prelude, I want to start diving into what the author of the textbook calls the rebuilding blocks. And there are quite a few of them. And we're going to kind of briefly touch on each of them and have a little bit of description. I'll give you a little bit of description and maybe a little bit of story for each of them. And then as part of the discussion, we'll kind of see if there's any one or two that, you know, you kind of identify with. Or if there's one or two that you feel will be really difficult to deal with. So kind of keep that in mind. Oh, and please, if you have any questions at all about anything I'm saying, just interrupt me. I can't say raise your hand because I can't see you. and that's too rigid for me anyway. So, you know, just please interrupt me. Let me know what's going on. It's not very fun to listen to a monologue for a long time, so as interactive as y'all can make it, it'll be more enjoyable for you, because I can talk forever. You just don't want me to do that. Okay, so the first block we're going to talk about, we're going to start in this bottom left, and it's denial. Denial is one of those emotions that often gets a really bad rap. We think of people in denial kind of being like this ostrich with his head stuck in the sand and just oblivious and not wanting to deal with anything, you know, by choice. And really, denial is one of those things that we do as a coping mechanism. Can it get out of control? Yes. But in general, it's one of those things when there's too much change going on and you can't deal with it all at once, is often you'll put some things to the side. Now, if you're putting everything to the side and not making any progress and not trying to deal with anything at all, that's not the good kind of denial. You stepped over into, you know, you probably need a little bit more help. But if you're just, you know, pushing things to the side and then coming back to them as you're able, then that's a healthy example of how you use denial. Okay, the next one, oh, there's our first block. And really, you're going to have to interrupt me if you have a question or a comment, okay?
No, that's fine.
Okay. All right. So, this next one is fear. And fear, believe it or not, is one of those helpful emotions, but it can also get out of control, too. Fear is helpful because its basis is to keep us from danger. And getting divorced can feel very dangerous because it's unknown, right? And most of us tend to fear the unknown. Fear can also get really, really out of control. And it did for me when I was going through my divorce, because I was absolutely terrified that I wouldn't be able to take care of myself. I was working a great job. I made great money. I was able to afford a home. I mean, I was able to really take care of myself. But there was a very large part of me that was terrified that I wasn't able to. And so I told myself these terrible stories all the time. One of them went something like this. Well, what if something happens and I can't work? And if I can't work, then I can't pay my bills. And if I can't pay my bills, then I'm going to lose my house. And if I lose my house, then I'm going to be on the street. And if I wind up on the street, living on the street, then I'm going to die a horrible death and nobody's going to know. And, yeah, I mean, it's funny now, but, oh my gosh, that's the terror that I was creating for myself on a daily basis. Oh my gosh. Hopefully none of y'all are quite that extreme, but if you are, I totally get you, because that's where I was. And...
Yeah.
You know, who is that?
Sorry, Karen, it's Hugo. I just want to say something here. I have something similar, but it's not with respect to security. It's more. You see, I have three kids. I have three boys, and and raising them going forward, to me, that's more of a concern and also being, you know, how do you provide a home for them, you know, being a single parent and bring them up to their healthy needs and, you know, that sort of thing. To me, that I'm not so worried about myself. I'm more worried about my kids than anything else. Okay. But okay, yes, I have something similar, but it's more related to my children.
Yeah, well, and that's a very valid point, because when I divorced, I didn't have kids. And the responsibility of caring for children is huge. I mean, it's huge when you're married. It becomes even larger when you're looking at becoming a single parent.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of information, you know, that you can read on the web. There are all kinds of books. And what's most important with making sure that the kids are okay is that you're okay. And that you can show them the love and the care that they need.
Yeah, you're right.
And, you know, that brings up something else I wasn't going to bring up till later, but I want to bring up now because it fits. All these pieces that we're talking about tonight as a rebuilding block, the kids are going to go through something very similar, right? So they're going to experience denial, and I can't believe mom and dad are really getting divorced. This can't be. It can't be that one of them's going to move out, right? They're going to experience fear. Well, what's my life going to be like? Are they going to divorce me? And all along here, there are going to be parallels. So the key is that they're going to take a lot of cues from you, right? Kids take cues from their parents. If their parents are freaked out, they're freaked out.
Okay.
If their parents are, you know, teaching them how to work through things, right, and being okay expressing emotions in a healthy way, then the kids are going to learn how to do that and know that it's okay for them to do it too.
Okay.
Thank you for interrupting.
Okay, thanks for that, No, thanks for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay. So that's our second build block. Our third one is called adaptation. This one is one we're going to talk about next week in detail, but it's also the most difficult one to get because nobody really wants to deal with it first. And the reason is that it requires us to start taking a look at how we changed in order to make the relationship work for as long as it did. And then taking responsibility for the changes that worked and the changes that didn't work, and choosing how you might want to go forward in a different way going forward. Now, I'll go into it more next week, like I said, but just kind of as a tease for it. You know, when we're all born, right, we're born with all these amazing capabilities. And it kind of depends on how we're nurtured within our family and with society, you know, at a broader level, as to what parts of our personality grow more naturally than others. And we can learn habits that don't necessarily serve us, right? They may have served the marriage, and they may not serve us. So that's where we can kind of get into some of the ideas of you may want to change some of the things that had become habituated within the marriage. And this is all kind of the stuff that you go through in general at the very beginning of the divorce process. It doesn't mean that it finishes at the very beginning. It's just that's usually when it kicks off. The next group of rebuilding blocks we're going to talk about kind of describes the lowest points of going through healing from divorce. And first one is loneliness. It's really, really common to feel completely and utterly alone when you're really walking down the path of divorce. And somehow being alone is, when you're walking down this path, is entirely different than when you were married and your spouse would go away for work or something, or just go out for a night, you know. There's a different quality to it, because somehow it becomes overwhelming and it adds to the sense of rejection or unworthiness. And you start to wonder things like, are you going to be alone forever? I know that when I went through my divorce. More. Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's more like a. No, it's. Yeah, like you say, it's a very bad or, you know, dark quality to this thing. The idiot quality to this thing, but okay, that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Tom of Verlaine, have y'all ever had that kind of visit with the loneliness beast?
What did you say, Hugo? I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
No, it sucks, you know?
It does.
It sucks. That's all I can say.
I experience loneliness. We have three children, three girls, and most of the time they live with my ex-partner, and so I have many, 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 many days really alone, and that's my greatest fear, that I will be alone the rest of my life, and I can't hardly think about it because it's so painful. And I'm so tired of eating supper by myself and getting up by myself and, you know, having coffee by myself and coming home from work by myself. Yeah.
Well, it's that loneliness that makes me especially glad that on Thursday, although, Hugo, is it still Thursday there?
Yeah. No. It's actually already Friday.
That's
close
what I thought.
Close to 4 a.m.
Okay.
4 a.m.
Oh,
now.
My gosh. Okay.
I'm talking in my sleep, yeah. I'm talking in my sleep.
What time is it there? Friday what morning?
Sorry? What country?
Quarter till 3 in the morning?
It's between 3 and 4 a.m. in the morning now, yeah. Well,
oh my. Oh my. Oh my.
That's a guy, this is a guy who wants to make sure he does what he needs to do to get through his divorce.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I don't do stupid things, right? Because it's easy, like, Karen, like you explained with the tornado thing. You know, when you are emotionally jacked up or unstable, or, you know, then to make the wrong and stupid decisions, it's very easy to do that. And then these kind of things, sometimes you don't want to mess up the rest of your life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's why I'd like to learn from people that have been there and, you know, have made the mistakes so that I don't need to make them. But, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. You make me laugh. I wonder if that's part of engineering training that makes us want to do that. Because that's the exact language I would have used to describe it.
Yeah. But anyway, here I am.
So, Tom, have you had much experience with the loneliness piece yet?
Yeah, I think, my wife told me in May of last year that she was going to file for divorce, and then in June, every June, the kids and my wife would go, we have a house down in New Jersey, and they'd go to Jersey for the summer, so they did that same thing, and so for the month of June and July and 2 weeks of August, I was basically by myself, so that was the where normally I'd go down every weekend and hang out with them, and so that was probably the toughest time. And then once I got past that, and you know, she came home, moved out, and that was a little bit lonely. But I had some really good friends here, and friends I grew up with in Michigan, and so I had a good support mechanism, and that helped. You know, the first 2-3 months were really, really tough. And then I was fortunate enough in September to meet a nice person, and she kind of helped me get through things. And she actually was divorced 7 years ago. She went through this program down in Austin, Texas. So she's the one that told me I should do it.
Tom, that's hilarious, because that's where I went through the program, was in Austin, Texas. It was. We probably, I mean, years apart, but probably through the same guy. How cool!
Yeah.
Small world.
Exactly.
Karen, I just want to say something else. The thing about the loneliness thing that catches me is not really being single or being alone. Like, you know, I'm an introvert guy. I can do things on my own, and I actually like doing things on my own. But the rejection part of it, I like also being involved with friends and doing things, you know, with my wife, like I used to do, so I miss those kind of things, you know. And also when you're alone, I used to think, you know, what's she doing now with this other guy, and you know, what are they doing? And those are the things that sort of bothered me, because I don't know how to explain it. I think it has to do with the rejection kind of thing. And I don't like, you know, going out with women now, since our divorce is pending. So it will probably only go through by March, I think, of this year. So I don't even know if I'm going to date I don't know when I'm going to take it. I do have friends at work and, you know, male and female friends, but I don't really go out with them. Because I used to go out with my wife and we used to do things together, so I really miss that, you know, the friendship and those kind of things. That's what I miss. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll only say one thing, that I read everything on the internet once my wife filed for divorce, and they were saying, like, okay, for every year that you're married, you should take off a month from dating. And I was reading all this stuff, and I was totally, I still love my wife, and I was like, all right, I'm going to take at least a year or two off, not date, bum, bum, bum. And then literally I just happened to meet this person who was super nice, and she actually told me I would not date anyone who hasn't been divorced for at least a year. And then, you know, we just started dating, and we've been going out. So it just happens. And if you're not looking for it, it's probably going to happen sooner.
Thanks for that.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay. I'm not worried about it. It's not something that worries me a bit. I'm not looking for it, you know. That's
exactly
all
right. That's what's good for you.
I think at this stage, I'm still in a sort of, how can I say, I'm sad about my marriage going down the drain, you know. Yes, I don't feel like going out now, these kind of things. And also, I mean, I'm not officially divorced yet, so what example do I set to my kids if I do that, you know? I'm not going to do that. Okay.
Yeah.
At this stage. Not that I feel like it. Okay.
Well, y'all have really set me up nicely for the next building blocks, because the next one is friendship, right? And that's one of the things that a lot of people find change when they start letting folks know that they're getting divorced, right? Well, obviously, you know, if your friend was your spouse, then that friendship, you know, is pretty much lost for most people. There are a few folks who are able to maintain a friendship with their spouse as they go through this, but it's usually very, very difficult and rare. What surprises folks is a lot of times other friendships falter because of divorce. In fact, there was some research done that showed that people who have close friends or family members or work colleagues who get divorced are nearly 1.5 times more likely to get divorced themselves than if they didn't know those folks. There seems to be some kind of social phenomenon associated with it. So some people have an instinctive feeling about that. And if their own marriage is not especially solid, they'll distance themselves. People will also distance themselves if they don't know how to deal with it, how to help you, or it just makes them feel uncomfortable in general. So, you know, that's a real thing that happens to a lot of people. The next rebuilding block is a guilt and rejection, right? And when you're feeling lonely and not doing a whole lot, there's a lot of room for the guilt and rejection to kind of play around in your mind. Now, typically, not always, but typically, the person who decides that the marriage or relationship is over feels guilt about breaking up the family, about ruining the relationship. And the person who hears the news that the relationship's over struggles with rejection. And yet, as we dive more into it, you'll find that both parties struggle with both guilt and rejection for different reasons. The
and
next
what if it's both the same person, you know, one that decides to end the marriage and the one that, what did you say? The one
finds out that it's ending.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, in the book, they use really clear terms, the dumper and the dumpies.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, in this case, I'm the dumpy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And so the first thing that you'll struggle with, you know, is the rejection.
Yes. No, that's for sure. That's
yeah.
a fact.
The next block we have to look at is grief, right? And a lot of people will say that divorce, getting through a divorce, is a grief process. And I think in a lot of ways it is. There's a very big part of divorce recovery that is a grief process because you've lost so much, right? It's not just the relationship that you've lost, right? It's the dreams of happily ever after. And, you know, it could be the family home that you had. It could be, you know, the retirement that you were looking forward to that now gets to be split. There's just a multitude of things that you lose when the relationship that you thought was going to last forever doesn't. And so the grief is real and it needs to be expressed. One of the ways that grief shows up for a lot of folks is by a change in weight, either a gain of weight or a loss of weight. Have any of y'all experienced any significant weight fluctuations?
I lost 30 pounds from last year in November to first part of February.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah, I just didn't.
Yeah, from
starting to get impact from
that.
Yeah.
For me, it was my wife had kind of put me through the ringer a little bit. So the first time that she cheated on me was 2003, and I lost 40 pounds at that point in time.
Wow.
And this time I actually, probably from drinking too much beer, I gained like 15 pounds. I've since lost that. I've lost at least 12 pounds of it to date.
Good.
So, yeah, so I'm almost back. So yeah, the first go around was the toughest, and then so this has almost been like. I had a parent that had Alzheimer's and didn't know they were dying, and it almost felt for me that they died already. So when the marriage ended, it was, I think, not as, it was still extremely painful, but not as painful because I think it's died a couple of deaths along the way. So.
Yeah.
Mm. I was hanging in there mainly, you know, I still loved my wife, and I didn't want to break up my family. So.
Yeah. How about you, Hugo? Do you have a weight change?
For me it is difficult. I think over time, because you see my situation is slightly on some different, but I believe my wife has a how can I call it an emotional affair. Okay, so I can't prove anything that she's had, you know, a physical relationship with any other person. So I can't prove it. But I mean, she's always been texting. You know, while we're eating, then she's texting, or you know, when this guy just calls her any time at night. You know, there's no privacy, that sort of thing. So it's been going on for a very long time, and I mean, I've been feeling uncomfortable, and yes, I've gained weight. What's about 50 pounds over 4 or 5 years, that sort of thing. So I am overweight now, for sure. So yes, definitely.
Yeah. Well, it's very, very common to have weight change. So,
yeah.
You know, I just want y'all to know that.
Yeah.
The the next block is anger. If you haven't experienced anger yet as a result of your divorce, I need to warn you that it's a different kind of anger than you have ever experienced before in your life. It can feel a lot like rage. And it may or may not all be directed at your ex.
Or men.
I know. We're going to spend one of our sessions talking about anger. If any of y'all took a peek at the agenda that I sent out, you'll see that we'll spend some time talking about anger, because it is just so different. I really surprised myself, and I'll tell you a story of how my ex surprised me too. When we get to that night. The last block in this kind of divorce pits area is finally letting go and accepting that things are not the way they were and they won't be that way anymore. And it's really kind of a major milestone when you can finally let go of the emotional ties of your marriage and stop investing any more of yourself into something that's just not there anymore. That when you do that, all of a sudden you're going to feel like you have more energy, and the divorce isn't the all-consuming being in your life anymore. And it will start to open you up to having other more positive things that you can start working on. And I hear somebody trying to interrupt me, but I keep talking.
No, if you go here, I think you feel kind of a relief, because I made a conscious decision to let her go, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And also to decide, and I think the anger thing is, once you let go, the anger is a lot less, because there's no, strings that can be pulled to make you angry, because I made a decision I won't get angry at her anymore, because it's not going to serve any purpose going forward. And therefore, I decided she can do whatever she wants. If I feel angry, I'm going just to walk away and, you know, work on it. But I've made a conscious decision not to do anything responsible. But I've decided to let her go. She's not my wife anymore by all practical or whatever reason. She's not my wife anymore. Even though we're not divorced, I mean, we're not acting in any way like husband and wife. So, I just made a decision to let her go.
That's really great. A lot of people aren't as able to do that so quickly as you have been. Although I guess it's been kind of a long time coming, though, too, hasn't it?
It's not a recent thing that happened now, you know. It's been happening over time. So I think the fact that the divorce is being served now, or the divorce is going through the courts now, is probably long time due, I would say. Although I don't like it, and I don't agree with it or whatever, you know, I would have liked to work on it, and it's a relationship comes from two you have two people to agree to get into a relationship. If one person doesn't want to be there, you know, I can't force her. I cannot do that. She wants to go, she can go.
Yeah, that's it. You know, it took two people to decide to get married, but only one to decide to divorce.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, after the divorce hits, you start working on self-worth. And I wish that this little image I had was backwards, because most of us, when we go through divorce, see the little kitten in the mirror when we're actually the big strong lion, so the other way around. But, you know, I couldn't do it, so I had to explain it now every time I show this slide. You know, low self-esteem really can impact your behavior a lot. And it's natural to feel a little bit less than you used to when you get divorced, because it really is a rejection, regardless of which side of the equation you're on. If you're the one deciding to get divorced or the one who's, you know, the dumpy, it really causes you to start thinking things like, you know, what's the matter with me? Am I not good enough? And it's really kind of miserable. I know I felt like there must be something terribly wrong with me if I couldn't make my marriage work. And it turned out that there was, and that I'd given myself away, and I had no real identity of me. I was just trying to be whoever my ex-husband wanted me to be. And so I was slowly destroying myself. And so my self-worth was pretty much non-existent by the time I got divorced. And it wasn't necessarily my self-worth at work. It was my personal self-worth that was destroyed. The next block is transition. And this is where a lot of really big changes start happening, because divorce is all about change. And after you make it through kind of the pits and, you know, not feeling like doing anything with the fear and the denial, all of a sudden, once you make it through the pits, you start to work on your self-esteem, you start to realize that things aren't really as horrible as they've been feeling for so long if you start taking some action. Right? And that's what this building block is meant to symbolize. And y'all are tapping into a little bit of this transition right now just simply by deciding to take this workshop. Right? You're embracing the change in some ways and trying to figure out, how can I move forward faster? And that's a really good thing. Now, the next four blocks are a little bit tough again, but it's tough in the good way, because you're moving forward towards something. And the first block...
Yeah, I just want to say something here. In terms of the transition thing, if, you know, you can decide, to be a victim, or I can decide to do something about the situation, and that's what I decided. I'd rather do something about it, and you know, because I think that will be the best for me and for my children. So yeah, I'd rather do something about it than just sit and do nothing and be a victim. So okay, that's what I wanted.
Yeah, and that's a very important point, though, is so many people wind up getting stuck in the denial and the fear that they can feel like they're the victim of the situation. I mean, obviously from just a little bit to the stories I've told you all tonight, or anything else you may have read about me, you know, on my website, that's where I was for a long time, just feeling like the victim. And it took a lot of hard work for me to move past that. And once I did, you know, it became easier and easier to continue taking those actions to move forward.
Yeah.
But honestly, this block right here of openness was one of the hardest ones for me. Because it implied that I had to move past the mask that I wore every day of everything's fine. Everything's fine. You know, the paste on smile and just keep slugging along when on the inside it's anything but a positive experience. And it was really, really tough for me to do this, especially there's one exercise that y'all will get to do. Oh goodness, I forget when it is, but it's in the second half, I think, of the classes, where you get to tell people something that they may not know about you. And I about vomited when I had a chance to do that. Everybody was going to be real supportive and helpful and encouraging me to do it. And I did it. One guy looked at me and said, "Now, don't you feel better?" I said, "No, I feel sick." And laughed. <left. laughs> So, yeah, this was something for me. But after I got past that, one of the next ones to start looking at was love. And not necessarily love as in being in another relationship, but really, what does love mean to me now? Most of us tend to marry for love. And if your marriage fails, then it's a pretty obvious question to have is, well, does that mean I don't know what love is, since I thought what I did was for love and then it didn't work out, right? It may be kind of twisted logic, but that's how I thought of it then. And, you know, I'm not alone. Over the years, I've met lots and lots and lots of, well, everybody who's taken this class, actually, has said, you know, yeah, I don't know that I know what love is. So we'll actually spend a class talking about it. And not just romantic love, but, you know, what are the different kinds of love? And obviously, all three of you know what it is to have a child, right? The parent-child kind of love.
Yeah.
Then the next one, this is another real biggie for me. Trust. How can you trust a person again? Right? Especially when I wasn't sure when I got divorced if I could even trust myself, because I picked, you know, I picked my husband here. I agreed to it. Was I really trustworthy in being able to make those types of decisions again? So that was a really big one that I had to work on, is learning to trust myself and then trusting others again.
Yeah.
Well, it is and it isn't, you know? That's what I found, is it was and it wasn't.
What did you guys say?
Yeah, I said it's going to be difficult. That's what I mean.
It is looking forward. I'll give you that, because it sure as hell was difficult looking forward for me at that point.
That's
and yet
great.
As I learned to trust myself more, it became easier to discern who outside of me was trustable.
That's
or
great.
Worthy of trust. I think I made up that word, trustable. Sorry. I'll do that a lot. If you don't know what something I say means, Just ask me, because it probably means I made it up.
I think the key word that you use there is discernment.
Yeah.
I think you would need, you know, you would need to know who you can trust and what you can trust him with. And maybe that is something that develops over time, is discernment.
Yes. And then there's also the phrase, which I think it was Ronald Reagan made famous here in the States. I don't know if you've heard for Hugo, but it's trust but verify.
Sorry, just say that again. Trust?
Trust but verify.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. That served me well, remembering that. So the next block is relatedness. And trying to figure out how to be in relationship again. It's not uncommon to find a new relationship fairly quickly after a divorce. And it's also pretty common that the new relationship will have a lot of things that the old relationship didn't. For me, I was not ready when I had my first relationship after divorce. And I got hurt really, really badly because I didn't know how to have a relationship. I only knew how to be married. And there's a big difference, a really big difference. So the thing to remember about relationships after divorce is that you'll probably use them to learn a whole lot about yourself. Right? And if you can hold on, not like you're married, and hold on a little bit differently, where it's more exploration and learning, the chances of getting really hurt decrease dramatically. But everybody's going to do their own thing. Just like when I heard this information, I was like, yeah, whatever. And I got into a relationship. It was horrible when he broke up with me. But there it is. The next block is sexuality. And for most of us, it's really, really normal to be curious about sex after divorce. I mean, you'll wonder, or at least I did, if I'd ever have it again. Or you may wonder, wow, I wonder if someone else I'm going to be with, or someone's else I'm going to be with, you know, is going to be more exciting because I've been in the marriage for so long. The thing to remember is that chances are the whole dating scene has changed dramatically since you were last in it, and that sexuality can be kind of a confusing part of divorce recovery process. So it's going to be one of the things that we talk about. I think it's week 9 that we'll talk about it. Now, after this, we're getting really close to the top of the little rebuilding pyramid. So the next block is actually accepting singleness and knowing that it's okay to be single. When I started off on my divorce journey, I thought that I must be wearing a great big brand on my forehead that let everybody knew who looked at me even slightly know that I was divorced. And that I was marked, you know, kind of like the scarlet letter, right? And that there was something wrong with me. And that people would obviously treat me differently. And it took me a while before I was like, wow, this single stuff's okay. I kind of like being able to do what I want to do when I want to do it without having to check in with anyone. It's kind of nice. And it was, you know, not a, a straightforward process for me. It took a while to get there. But I was really glad I did. The next block is purpose. Most folks, you know, when you're married, you have a dream of what the future is going to be like with your partner, with your spouse. And when you get divorced, that kind of gets tossed away because that's not going to happen anymore, is it? And it can be really easy to get caught up in there not being a purpose or a plan or dreams for the future when you're first going through the healing from your divorce. But it's a really important thing to keep in mind is that there is a future for you. There are things that you can still accomplish, that you still want to accomplish. And there's plenty of time for you to do it. So you get to figure out what the new plan is, what the new purpose is in your life. And that can be a lot of fun. For me, it turned out that I had a complete change of career. I mean, I realized that there were more things about me that needed to change than just my marital status. And so it's not always easy, but it has been a lot of fun recreating myself. And then we get to this wonderful block at the very, very tippy top called freedom. And it's when you finally realize that you have complete and utter freedom of choice and being yourself. And that's something that a lot of people never reach, is they always feel constrained by something. But my hope for each of you is that you will experience a real freedom of just being completely you and kind of relishing that as a result of this rocky start in dealing with the end of a marriage. So that is the entire pyramid of 19 rebuilding blocks. And with that, we have some time, luckily quite a bit of time, to start kind of discussing what that whole presentation was about. Who would like to tell us which rebuilding blocks kind of describe where you are right now and kind of kick this off?
All right, I'll kick in. I think I'm at the point where I finally realized, you know, a few months ago that it's over and that even if she came back to me and said, hey, I made a mistake, I'd like to come back, that nothing would change. It'd be the same. You know, you can't change the spots on a leopard, so...
Yeah.
That, I think, was very cathartic in kind of getting me to the point where I realized it was over and not, you know, kind of sitting in that la-la land of, you know, maybe things are going to work out. So it helped me move along. And I think I'm more along the lines of I'm angry in that she is... taking us through this whole divorce process with the lawyers and trying to quite frankly just being greedy and trying to go after things that, you know, were my family's and inheritance and trust that muddied the water quite a bit. And, you know, I was more than happy to just give her 50% of everything that we would match together, but just being greedy. And it unfortunately created a terrible environment, and I think she is under the delusion that and she thinks I'm crazy for not just realizing that the marriage broke down and we should be friends, and she thought we were going to have holidays together and go out to dinner with the kids, and we were just going to be friends. So I don't, that's not my, way of looking at things. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. So it sounds like if I were to say two blocks that I really heard you talk about, it was the anger and the letting go. Those are probably the primary ones. Okay. Okay, good.
Yeah. Okay, Karen, I can go next. You go, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I initially, obviously, the denial thing was big with me, and the fear and grief, and then the anger thing, obviously, I was very angry. But then I had, I also read some books and things like that. The guilt and the rejection thing, obviously, huge. And the loneliness. But I've come to realize that I need to let her go, and I can't hold on to her, And so after that, after I realized that I'm more at the end of the tornado than at the beginning, that sort of thing. But yes, I think in terms of self worth, I'm not like. How can I say? Me and my wife, we used to fight a lot. We used to fight, and after I realized that I just should let her go, I never reacted on, if she made remarks or anything, or came with any, anything that would make me angry. It stopped altogether. So I am not, I think I'm past the anger bit. I'm not saying 100% past, but I think I'm like 90% there, In terms of friendship with my wife, I don't think I'm ever going to be we're not going to be the friends that we used to be. I think my objective with her is just to have a good relationship with her, open communication, because she's the mother of my children, and going forward I would have to have a good working relationship with her, otherwise the thing's not going to work really well. So that's the way I view this, but I think, yes, in terms of the building blocks going forward, the trust, the self-worth, the openness, those kind of things, I think I have a lot of work to be done there, So I'm not...
Yeah.
I'm like at the end of the bottom building blocks, but I haven't started with the top ones yet, that sort of thing. Okay.
Great. Thank you for sharing that, Hugo. One of the things that I want to be sure and not mislead y'all on, going through a building block does not mean check, you're done. It's really common to have things happen throughout the divorce process that can throw you back. Now, just as a quick example, right? Tom mentioned that his soon-to-be ex is being a little bit greedy, right? And I'm guessing that there can be days where the anger's not really there so much, but then she pulls something, or you get a note from the attorney, and it'll throw you back.
Exactly.
Yeah. So... this is kind of, an overall snapshot, and so don't be concerned if you find yourself going backwards menstrual block that you thought you were already done with. It's all normal.
Oh, that's why it's a tornado now. So you go back. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not all the way back. It's just part way back. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, you have a small flashback. That's it. And you carry on again.
Yep. Miss Verland.
I was thinking about that for myself. The first 6 months after my partner left, I thought I was making good progress through this, letting go and the grief. And then I found out that she was dating seriously at a man, so that, it was very confusing for me after 27 years as this gay person that all of a sudden she's moving in another direction, and it really, really pushed me back, and I struggle with a lot of rejection, rejection and feeling that I've been replaced, and that, who I am and what I am is not any good anymore, and that she's found something better, then the self-worth has really been, I feel really pretty bad about myself. So that second row, rejection, grief, anger, letting go, self-worth, it's kind of where I'm stuck, I think.
Yeah. Well, then it's going to be a really good thing that we're going to spend a lot of time on those blocks, it sounds like, for everyone. Because if you look at our agenda, there's, we're going to talk about the grief, we're going to talk about the anger, we're going to talk about the self-worth. We will talk about letting go, but not to the last class. So I'm taking it a little bit out of order. So that's good to know. One of the things that also strikes me in each of y'all's stories is that there is an act of betrayal in each of your stories.
Say that again.
And you just shared. I'm sorry?
Say that again. What were you saying?
There's an element of betrayal in each of y'all's stories.
Betrayal.
So, yeah. Betrayal. So, Verland, you feel very much betrayed, not only from the marriage, but from the lifestyle, right? It's like it was a double lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, Tom, you were saying that there had been fidelity, back in, 2003, I think you said? The first time. So there's your betrayal. And you go now with the emotional affair, right? There's betrayal there as well. And our fourth participant, who's not here tonight, is struggling with betrayal too. So I always find it very interesting what it is that kind of seems to be a theme for a class and or a group, right? And obviously I think that betrayal is going to be a very common thread that's going to weave throughout the 10 weeks for us here, which I think will make the discussions all that much more rich and valuable for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyone else like to make a comment about the blocks, not necessarily where they see themselves right now, but the ones that seem like they are going to be the toughest going forward? I know that Hugo had mentioned, a few of them that he saw, as kind of being, well, that's going to take some work, with the openness and the trust especially. Anybody else see any of those looking forward?
Well, I heard a good comment the other day that I thought was pretty interesting. A guy said to me after he heard what I was going through, he said, trust is like virginity. You only lose it once. Then you never get it back.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that you kind of take with you, I think, as baggage in the next relationship, if you will, that, you know, mm-hmm. once you've lost trust in someone and then trying to give trust back to someone, I think that is a stumbling block.
Yeah. Totally. And I'm going to share some personal stuff here again. You know, I mentioned that I remarried, I think it was, yeah, it's going to be 6 years this year. I think it may be 7. I don't know.
You should know that.
Well, it's okay. He doesn't know it either. We've been living together. Okay. We know how long we've been together. But we don't really know how long we've been married. I know it sounds terrible. It's really not. So, but anyway, what I was going to say is, you know, I'm actually my husband's third wife, and his first two wives cheated on him.
Mm.
So having him learn how to...
He's a serial monogamist.
Yes, very much so. and so I'll tell you, it was really rocky for us having him be able to really trust me.
Yeah.
You know, when I wasn't going to be hurt in the same way again.
No, I can imagine.
But there, he trusts me now.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily an easy thing to accomplish, but it can be done.
Yeah.
Yeah, but maybe you've proven that you're trustworthy, and that's the thing. No?
Well, and that is a big piece of it, right? It is a big piece is that someone can prove that they're trustworthy. But it also has to be not necessarily to the point of where you're getting the microscope at, you know, and looking at every little thing and, you know, expecting your partner to be wearing, you know, one of those bracelets that tells you where they are at all times.
Yeah, I can imagine. That would get driving crazy if someone's looking over your shoulder the whole time.
Yeah, and that's how some people try to reestablish trust again, right? And that's why I think that it's very, very important to trust yourself and your decision-making ability first, and then it becomes easier to have the discernment about others.
Yeah. Yeah.
And easier does not equal easy. Right? It's two different things.
Yeah.
How about you, Verlan? Is there one or two that you're thinking, that's going to be interesting?
I think the trust one is going to be the hardest one.
Okay, so we're unanimous on that one then, I'm hearing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. Y'all have been doing really, really well with chiming in, and I want to thank you for that. So, you know, not every class that I have is like that. So the next question that I have up for us is, you know, is there anything you'd like to share about yourself, you know, about your situation that you haven't had a chance to share yet?
Nope.
One nope?
I think I don't fully share everything my relationship. We were married, we would have been married 23 years now
this past November. Well, yeah, we were married 23. But obviously we didn't celebrate it. But yes, yeah, to me it's just a sad thing, you know. And I hear what you say, Karen, about what do you call it? That, you know, there's something in yourself that, you know, you must also sort of contribute it to this thing.
Yes.
I do agree with that. But what I don't, what I, I'm not saying I don't agree with is, I think, you know, when you promise to marry someone, you actually promise to share your life with that person, yeah? And you promise to work out things with them. And then, when push comes to shove, you don't do that. I mean, what are your promises worth? You know, if you cannot fulfill your promises, then, and to me, it's more a character thing. Yes, I agree. I have contributed. Obviously, I'm not a perfect. I'm not God. I'm not perfect. I can tell you, I'm really have a lot of flaws. But if I'm not willing to fulfill my promises or to say that at least we'll work on something or whatever, I think that's a character. That's a character. To me, that's a character flaw. But okay, that's something else. I don't want to go into that now. I'm just disappointed, that's all. I'm so disappointed, and that's basically it. But yes, I think there's a lot of scope going forward. Life's not, you know, life doesn't end here. So there's a, you know, the sun comes up every day and there's a new tomorrow. So I look forward to continuing with my life. Life is good and life is there to enjoy, and you have to plan to do it. And that's what I plan to do. I'm going to enjoy the rest of my life. I'm not going to sit and sulk, and I need to get over this. It's possible.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a great thing that I'd like for you to at least keep in the back of your mind as you move forward through all this, is to be patient with yourself in the persistence that you're having.
Yeah.
So, you know, if one day it's not quite as easy as it was the day before, just be patient with yourself that day. Because overall, your persistence is going to pay off. And you will have, you know, all of this behind you, and you will be living a wonderful life that you're enjoying and feeling joyous about.
Oh, thanks for that
reassurance. You're welcome. I know when I was going through my divorce, I was sure, oh my gosh, there's no way things can ever get better. I just don't see a way forward. It seemed like I just kept beating my head against a wall, but even I made it through. So.
Yeah.
Verlan, is there anything you'd like to tell us about you or your situation?
I don't think so. I'm sorry, I'm just kind of thinking about all this. I think I pretty much shared, you know, enough about myself.
Okay. Well, thank you. Yeah, that's one of the things that as we go week to week, our sharing kind of builds upon each other. and we'll start to get a real nice picture in our minds of who everybody is. And I think it's one of the most beautiful pieces that I... Seeing how y'all kind of progress and work through each block individually and together is just amazing. And I'm really looking forward to each of y'all experiencing that. So that was kind of what I hope to get out of this workshop. Do y'all have any real expectations for what you want to get out of it?
Yes. Yeah.
Share, please.
Yes, I think, now, like I said, you don't want to get stuck in this, excuse me, you know, like you're in this, when you're going through divorce, it feels like you're stuck in this mess, right? And you're emotionally unstable, let me be honest. And, can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, I can hear you just fine.
Okay. Yes. Now you feel you're stuck in this mess and you want to get out of this, you know, you want to keep this behind you and the sooner the better. And, like you say, you need to have patience with yourself. This is probably not going to happen overnight, eh?
Right.
So I think it's going to be a process, but what I hope to get out of it is, you know, like I say, good. I'd like to have the guidance of somebody that's been through this, like yourself, and the guidance is something that I'm looking forward to, and yeah, obviously. I also would learn, you learn a lot from other people as well, eh? And obviously the people also that's in this group, I'm looking forward to learning from them, you know, that's basically.
Thank you.
I want to be able to just move through the grief. I'm so tired of feeling sad, and I'm just tired of feeling all this, you know. I want to feel happy again.
I want you to feel happy again, too. Shoot, it's horrible being stuck in the grief.
Yeah.
Well, cool. We'll work on that. Definitely. How about you?
Yeah, I think just getting better coping mechanisms and, you know, going through the process, and also, as you go said, just listening to other people's perspectives that are going through the same type of thing, I think would be very beneficial.
Okay, cool. Well, it helps me to know what y'all's expectations are, because then I can make sure that we kind of hit on them every week. So that's something that I'd be keeping in the forefront of my mind each week. This next question seemed a little bit odd at first, so let me tell y'all what I'm thinking. I'm asking if it's okay if I could share your email address with the group, because I believe that one of the most important parts of the class is building the relationships with each other and having connection outside of just our scheduled time together. Because we have a very brave bull who's up in the middle of the night, determined and persistent to get through his divorce, and living in a completely different country, I didn't figure that phone calls would be all that convenient. So I thought maybe if I could connect you all through email, that may work out well. So are y'all okay with me sharing y'all's emails with each other?
I got
problem.
Okay, good. All right, fabulous. I will keep our fourth participant off the group emails until I get her consent as well. But with that, it will make a discussion of our homework assignment for tonight that much easier. If y'all have your agenda, it might be a good time to just kind of pull it out so you can reference it and have kind of an understanding of how I set this up. Sometimes people get very confusing the way I laid out the agenda, so I just want to be sure and go over it with y'all so it makes sense. So you see, there are four columns to this, and then blue and white striping on the rows. And I colored the rows different colors so that it's easier to follow across, you know, as to which one that you've got going on. And so the columns are the session, right? So it's session number one tonight, and February 4th obviously is the date. The session title, I call this one orientation. And then the next column is reading. So when you have your books, Verlaine, yes, I will have them yours tomorrow. Tom, yours is showing up on Saturday. Hugo, I don't know if you've had a chance to get yours yet or not.
Yes, but, I'm going to get mine. No
okay,
problem.
Good. So chapter one's going to be the first reading. I'm also, I don't know if all of y'all are on my newsletter list or not, but I'll tell you what my plan is for the special bonus for February. It's me reading chapter one of the book, so it's just going to be an audio recording. I'm going to get that done tomorrow. If you'd like, I can send you a link to that as well. So if you want to hear the news that's in the book, it won't have all the pretty pictures that are in the book, but you'll actually hear the words of the book, and I can send that to y'all, so, you know, you won't feel like you're behind if you don't have your book right away.
Thanks. That would help a lot.
You're welcome. So you get to listen to me talk some more, aren't y'all lucky? Oh, my goodness. So the last column is what I call the assignment. And so this is where you actually need to take some action to do something. You'll notice that the first one, number one, says FDAS on your assignment sheet. And what that stands for is the Fisher Divorce Adjustment Survey. It is a self-assessment that you'll take online. And I'm going to send you an email with all the details of how you can do that right after the session tonight. So you'll have that. It will take you about 30 minutes to get through, and you'll have a special code so that you can put it into the shopping cart so there won't be any charge for you. I mean, it's just part of the class. So if you have any questions about how to do it, you know, please email me back, and we'll take care of it for you. And then I'm going to ask that you have it done before Wednesday. Reason being is that I want to make sure I have plenty of time to put together kind of class statistics so you know what's the average in each of the different categories that you'll be measured on in that survey. And it's 100 questions long. So when I say you're going to need 30 minutes to take it, you probably will need 30 minutes to take it where you can be, you know, alone and concentrate. The next one, the second piece, is the calls, email, or text. This is where I ask y'all to get interactive with each other and kind of just touch base. Even if touching base you know, if somebody sends out an email and said, well, you know what, I finally am tired of hearing Karen's voice after listening to her read chapter one. You know, whatever you want it to be, right, just kind of reach out to each other and start to, you know, build a little bit more of a relationship on top of what we've already started tonight. And like I said, you guys are incredible and in that you were already willing to share so much. I really, really appreciate that. I think it's going to help you all out a whole lot as we move forward. Then number three is start a journal using I feel statements. And the reason why it's important to use the I feel statements is that we have a tendency to say I think a whole lot more, to believe that how we're going to get through this is just by thinking and putting down, you know, step one, step two, step three, where what's really important is that you get the feeling and the thinking together. Because if you only move to the thinking, it can become a problem with stuffing the feelings down or ignoring them. And when you ignore something, you know, it doesn't just go away. It will fester. And so as much as you can do to keep those feelings acknowledged and work through, and we can bring them up, you know, in the class and in emails, so that you get as much value out of them as you can as quickly as possible, it will really, really help a lot. And, of course, the suggestion here is you might want to start by, you know, writing your reactions to this first class. And I don't know if y'all have done any journaling before. Have any of y'all done any journaling?
I'm sorry, say that again. You're cutting out a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. Have you ever done any journaling?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, so you have, Verlaine. Tom or Hugo, have either of you?
No, I'm not the best report writer in the world, but I'll do this. Are you going to read it?
No, this is just for you. Just for you. The journaling is just for you. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not a report. It's just for you guys. It's just kind of a way to make sure that you help to get all the feelings out so that they can be processed. And make your healing as complete as possible as we can in this 10 weeks. And if the journaling really works for you, you know, you can continue on with it. And I'm going to suggest that you actually take pen to paper when you do this. The reason being is that you experience the expression of the emotion a whole lot differently by having to use the eye-hand coordination to write something out than you do with just hitting the keys on a keyboard. Okay.
Great.
All right. So that was pretty prescriptive, but that's how I feel about it. So any questions about the any of the homework?
Nope. No.
That's
fine.
No. Okay. Good. Well, then, we are really working out pretty well close to time here. Congratulations, you guys. The next piece, change of focus. The next piece is the clothes. I like to have kind of a set clothes to the class because it kind of puts a nice ribbon on it for us all and ends us off with a good thought going forward. I usually offer two different ways of closing a class. Sometimes people choose that they want to do both of them. But the first one is the Serenity Prayer. Are y'all familiar with the Serenity Prayer?
Mm-hmm. No.
No. Okay. Let me show you what the Serenity Prayer is. It's, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So that's the Serenity Prayer. And then the second option is just to go around our virtual room here and take a moment to each say something that we're grateful for. It may be something that happened in class. It may be something that's going on in your life. It may just be, you know, something that's very personal to you that you're thankful for. Do y'all have any preference for what you'd like to do?
Yeah, I would like to do the gratitude.
Michelle.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah? How about you, Tom?
I can do both.
Do both?
Yeah.
Now, Hugo and Fran, did either of you choose gratitude because you had anything against the Serenity Prayer, or would doing both be okay with you?
That'd be fine.
Okay.
That would be fine with me as well.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right. Well, then let's do both. Okay. Would you like to start with the Serenity Prayer or the Moment of Gratitude? I've got all kinds of options for you guys to confuse you.
Let's start with a Serenity.
Okay. Hugo wins. Nobody else spoke up. All right. And, you know, please feel free to say it with me. I think it's a little bit nicer if we all say it together. But if you've got, would prefer to say it silently, then that's cool too. So, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things
I cannot change,
the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Wonderful. Now for the moment of gratitude. I can start unless one of y'all would prefer to. Okay, I'm starting.
Okay.
Don't forget, so we have to go second, third, and fourth.
I can start. You go.
Yeah. Oh, would you like to? Okay.
Okay. No, I'm glad to meet the other guys, and I'm also glad to hear that I'm not alone in this boat, right? And I'm glad that I've learned a lot today as well, because I see this light at the end of the tunnel. And but yes, I also know there's a lot of work to be done, but it's good as long as I know I can get out of this. I see looking forward to go, you know, to go through this. Okay, that's my, and I'm grateful for that. Thanks, Karen.
Okay.
And thanks,
thank you,
God, for sharing all the stuff that you've shared with me.
That was wonderful. Thank you for that.
I feel gratitude tonight, especially for the comment you made, Hugo, about your wife when you said if she wants to go, she can go. And that takes a lot of courage to let somebody go. And something that I'm afraid to do or sad about doing. So I really appreciated that phrase, if she wants to go, she can go. And you seem to have a sense of peace about that. I'm sure it's been hard for you, but...
It was very hard for me, because I loved her very much.
Yeah.
But when I made the decision, it became easier for me. Okay, like I said, all my anger, all those kind of things, just decreased significantly. And I mean, with significantly, I can say 90% to 95%.
But do you still love her?
I do. I do.
Yeah.
And look, it's not, and I mean, love is not like, for me, it's not like a button that you just switch off. It's not like a light switch that you just flick. It doesn't happen like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, I do. I still love her, and the feelings. I that's why I say I'm not. I don't even feel like dating somebody else now. You know, I can't do that.
Uh-huh. I understand that.
Yeah.
Tom, would you like to go next, or would you like for me to go next?
Well, you can go.
I am especially thankful for each of you all showing up and participating as much as you have from the very beginning. I think that the support that Verlan and Hugo just shared was beautiful. I really appreciate you guys each showing up here with a willingness to be here and to participate at a really deep level from the very beginning. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say I'm grateful for the same thing. I'm grateful that the girl I met, you know, cared enough to say that this was a really good program and it helped her out a lot in getting through a very difficult time. And
yeah.
She thought that she met, you know, some nice people, and it really helped her in getting more grounded and going through a very difficult time, which you know, it helps when you have other people in the same boat. So I'm grateful for that.
Excellent. Well, thank you all very much. I am going to send you all a link to the recording of the call tonight, just in case there's anything that you want to review. You'll have that. And then Judy, our fourth, or actually fifth, if I count me, we'll have access to that, and hopefully she'll be able to make it next week. She did let me know today that she was trying not to let something happen that would prevent her, but she wasn't 100% sure that she'd be able to get out of the commitment. And I'm guessing because of her actual presence on the call that she wasn't able to get out of what had come up for her. So look forward to meeting her next week. And like I said, I won't include her on the email with y'all when I share y'all's emails addresses. And so you'll get two emails from me tonight, one with the link and the discussion of how to get to the Fisher Divorce Adjustment Survey, and then one with y'all's emails for each other. And then the next one will probably be out tomorrow because it takes a while for the recording to get processed. And after it gets processed, I post it to the website so y'all can easily get to it. And then probably later on tomorrow, there's another link to another recording with me in the first chapter. So lots of emails coming your way.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Tom and Verlan,
okay.
Have a great evening. Hugo, I hope you have a fabulous Friday.
Yes, the sun's coming up here. Okay.
Awesome.
You guys have a nice sleep. Thank you.
All right.
Bye, y'all.
Good night and good morning, Hugo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.